All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I'm your host, Aaron Freeman, and today I'm going to be joined by Spencer McLaughlin, the host of the Locked On Ducks and Locked On Pac-12 podcast, to talk all about Drake London as well as Marcus Mariota.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So, guys, you know me. I'm Aaron Freeman, been covering the Falcons for many years, formerly at FalcFans.com, RIP, still going strong on Twitter, at FalcFans, and, of course, the host of this world-renowned Locked On Falcons podcast, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Sports Atlanta podcast family. And I want to thank everyone that makes Locked On Falcons their first listen each and every day. Of course, like all Locked On Sports Atlanta podcast, Locked On Falcons is free and available Monday through Friday on your preferred podcast platform, whether that be Apple, Odyssey, Google, Spotify, or elsewhere. And of course, you can also check out the video version of the podcast on the Locked On Falcons YouTube channel. And if you do and you subscribe and like and all that various stuff, you'll get the video version of the podcast the night before the audio drops. So with that being said, let's jump right into the conversation with Spencer McLaughlin, the host of the Locked On Pac-12 podcast, to give us some insights into Drake London. And then later, Spencer will put on his different hat as the host of the Locked On Ducks podcast to talk more about Marcus Mariota. All right, guys, you're Locked On Falcons, and I am joined by an illustrious guest, none other than Spencer McLaughlin. He is the host of Locked On Ducks as well as Locked On Pac-12. We'll be talking, using his Pac-12 knowledge, to talk all about Drake London, the Falcons' first-round pick out of USC. And then we'll use that Oregon Ducks knowledge to talk a little bit more about Marcus Mariota and what he can bring to the table here for the Atlanta Falcons this season. But let's start things off talking about Drake London. Spencer, welcome to Locked On Falcons, but let's jump right into it. You know, Drake London was a very productive player early in his career as a slot receiver at USC. Then this past year really shined as an outside receiver. I'm curious to get your thoughts on where do you sort of see him projecting best in the NFL, inside, outside, or do you think he can do both at a high level and be that sort of versatile weapon for the Falcons?
I think he can do both. Yeah, you know, he has the size to play on the outside. You know, if you're talking about a really prolific offense, which the Falcons are probably not going to have, you know, a Chiefs level offense this year or put up the numbers that the Cowboys will or any of these other great teams who, you know, score the ball a lot, then, you know, maybe Drake London would be more suited to be an inside slot receiver and he could be a big body there. And that's a tough matchup for any nickel or dime corner because those guys tend to be, you know, pure corners and not very big. And so if you line them up on the inside, you're either going to force teams to run a lot of zone or you're just going to have tough man-to-man situations with him. But he's a guy who you can line up inside, outside. He can run the whole route tree, great hands, big physical frame, knows how to use it well. And, you know, he doesn't have the most startlingly amazing physical traits all the way through, right? He is big, right? He is tall, but he's not very fast. That's kind of the one knock on him, so to speak, is he's not, you know, somebody who has blazing speed out there. But when you watch his college tape and you watch him play in the Pac-12 conference over the last several years, he was USC's best offensive player for the last couple of years, and it was not particularly close. And they had a pretty good quarterback in Keaton Slovis. And, you know, Drake London didn't necessarily pop off the screen, but he was just producing every time you watched him. And you look up at the end of the game and you check the box score and go, wow, he had 9 catches for 150 yards and 2 touchdowns. Like, how did that happen? But that's the sort of player that he is. And I think the offensive versatility is something Arthur Smith will enjoy having because you can put him close to the line of scrimmage. You can put him all the way out wide. You can put him in the slot and he can run downfield routes, short routes, use his big body to, you know, maybe shield guys on a slant or some inside breaking routes, or he can run the deep ball, go up and catch 50-50 passes as well. So I think the Falcons made a good selection here. I know a lot of people wanted Garrett Wilson and, you know, Garrett Wilson, or it's just from shows that I've heard that people say, oh, I would have taken Garrett Wilson first. I understand that. because Wilson is a little bit flashier than Drake London, but rest assured, Falcons fans, this guy is just going to be a rock solid wide receiver who can produce as much as the passing game will allow.
Well, here on Locked On Falcons, you know, very much pro Drake London, very much anti Garrett Wilson for the Falcons. So I'm happy they didn't go in that direction. But you talk about sort of him being very productive and sort of being the guy at USC, particularly this past year. And that was one of the things that really stood out to me, that as the year progressed, it became very clear that defenses were scheming to try to slow him down and really struggled to do so just because USC was able to find ways to get him the football. When he was facing teams that were willing to give him sort of that free release off the line of scrimmage, they would utilize a lot of those sort of curl routes and hitches to get him the ball underneath and let him cook after the catch. When teams were playing a lot of press, you know, they would, that's when they would open up their offense and use him on a lot of fade balls, the heavy mix of screens and whatnot. And I'm just curious, do you think that experience of sort of being that alpha guy in USC's offense this past year projects well to the next level of being sort of that number one wide receiver and being that guy that can be a high volume pass catcher?
I do, yeah. And when you think about Drake London, the best way to describe him is, I think, a plus possession receiver, right? He can run the deep routes. You know, you can throw him a deep post or a nine ball in a one-on-one situation, let him, you know, use his frame to go up there and make a catch. But I think when you think about, you know, where Drake London is going to be at his best, I think it's going to be within 15 yards of the line of scrimmage. And he's not going to be a one-trick pony in that regard, right? Whereas, you know, these guys like Julian Edelman or Danny Amendola or Hunter Renfrow, you know, those sorts of slot receivers, that's not what Drake London is, where everything's going to come essentially on this side of the first down marker. He's going to be able to do whatever Arthur Smith asks of him in the route tree. And when you look at the schemes that Smith has deployed in Tennessee and has brought over to Atlanta as well, right, he loves to run the ball first, and then he loves to run the ball and play action and set up those two-man routes, right, where you go max protection, and you've got the over route across the middle of the field about 10 to 15 yards down there, and then you have the deep post to clear. I think he can do either of those, but when I think about when Drake London will be at his best, it'll be on that 15-yard reception where he's catching the ball on a deep dig over the middle where the linebackers have sucked up. You get it to him in space, and he's a handful to bring down. I mean, once he gets the ball and he starts running, he is a big physical guy. He is a great athlete. He's got a little bit of basketball in his background as well. And when he catches the ball and starts running at you, he's not trying to get out of bounds. He's not Tyreek Hill going to jitterbug his way away from contact, or Hollywood Brown, you know, kind of catch it and just be a one trick pony over the top, but not taking a whole lot of big hits. No, he will go over the middle. He'll be willing to take whatever shots the NFL rules will allow nowadays, but he will deliver any shots that the officials will allow him as well, because once he gets the ball, he wants to add to that yards after the catch total every single time, and he's not going to avoid contact to do it. He's not a guy who, you know, like a Tyreek Hill or a Hollywood Brown, and I'm sure you could think of other examples in the NFL, he's not going to just run away from guys. But when you're as big as he is and you have the mindset that he does, he almost turns into a running back. I think it reminds me a lot of A.J. Brown, who's now a Philadelphia Eagle. I think that's the sort of player that he can become. And, you know, working in those dig routes or deep ends in the 8 to 15-yard range, I think is where he can really, really thrive for Arthur Smith. And I think that's part of why they made that selection, because I think you look at Garrett Wilson, he projects a little bit more as a Calvin Ridley type, and the Falcons are, you know, not expecting to win a Super Bowl this year, obviously. And so Calvin Ridley will be back playing eventually, or so they hope. But I think if you pair those two guys together, then you're going to have the sort of wide receiver tandem that you need to score points at a high level.
No, yeah, I agree with you on that. His playing personality is very physical. He's going to fight for every yard, every catch. It seems like he doesn't go down until there's like four or five defenders trying to drag him down.
Yeah, it happens a lot. And it doesn't look like it should, right? He catches the ball, and it's like I was talking about earlier, where you don't really expect it to happen. You look up, you go, oh, he's got 8 catches for 120 yards and 3 touchdowns. Like, oh, really? And then he catches the ball, he starts running in space, you're like, oh, that's probably going to be a nice gain. And then you look at it, you go, he got like 7 more yards than I thought he was going to, because he just refused to go down. And that's the sort of athleticism, strength, and size that we're talking about.
Now, you talk about the athleticism, and the biggest knock on Drake London, you've already mentioned this a little bit. You know, I'm curious to get your thoughts on, you know, I think the big knock on him is questions about his speed, questions about his ability to separate. How big a issue do you think that is going to be for him at the next level, dealing with, you know, bigger, stronger, faster corners at the NFL level than he dealt in the Pac-12? Or do you think he has, given his physicality, given his size, to be able to overcome some of those issues?
I think his size is really important. If he were not as big a guy as he is, I think he's around 6'5 or so, that would be a little bit more of a red flag because he doesn't have elite high-end speed. He didn't run the 40-yard dash, I think both to, you know, protect himself a little bit with his draft stock. But I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing because I think we overreact to 40 times. I mean, the best example of that is John Ross ran, what was it, a 4.26, but he wasn't able to get open as often as he needed to, and he wasn't able to catch as many passes as he wanted, and he wasn't as refined of a route runner as someone like Drake London is. So you have to balance route running and speed to be a great wide receiver. I mean, you look at somebody like Ja'Marr Chase, who bursts onto the scene this year as a wide receiver. He has better speed than Drake London, but from a route running perspective, I think they're probably pretty similar. And that's why London has elevated himself to being the number 8 overall pick in the NFL draft this year, is because he does all those little things well. He's got a really high football IQ. He's great in the scramble drill, which I think will pair really well with Mariota because he's more than capable of doing that. But London's football IQ is through the roof. He's a great route runner. He's got good hands and just good feel. You know, every time he's running a route over the middle, you get the sense that he knows where everybody on the defense is and what to expect, whether the ball is going to be thrown to him or not. He's a willing blocker as well. And, you know, for someone like Arthur Smith, who loves the power run game, sometimes he wants to bring a receiver in on the end line and use him almost like a tight end to block or chip a linebacker on a toss play. And that's something that I think factored into their draft decision as well here at number 8, and why Drake London, again, is a good fit. And look, I understand people are going to say, oh, he's not that fast. He doesn't have the big speed. You have to have some combination of the two, like I was saying. You can't just be fast. You can't just be a great route runner. And does Drake London have, you know, John Ross, Tyreek Hill type speed? No, he does not. But is he a better route runner than most wide receivers who come out of college going to the NFL who, you know, are seen as these elite physical prospects? I would say yes. And I think that you can't always quantify that sort of stuff. It doesn't pop off the screen, but it results in what we saw from him during his college career with USC. And that's just an intense level of production.
Absolutely. So that's going to leave it for our Drake London conversation. But of course, Spencer has some great insight into former Oregon Ducks quarterback Marcus Mariota, and we'll get into that as we continue today's Locked On Falcons. So guys, of course, we still have more to come today on Locked On Falcons with Spencer McLaughlin, the host of Locked On Ducks and Locked On Pac-12, to talk about Marcus Mariota. But before we get there, guys, got to let you know about Built Bar, the best tasting protein bar on the market that tastes just like a candy bar, even better than a candy bar, because Built Bars not only taste good, they're good for you. They're low in sugar, calories, and carbs, but high in protein and fiber. And you definitely want to check out Built Bar right now, this time of year. It's summer coming up, and whether you're trying to get fit and get that beach body, or you just want a snack on the go when you're out and about, you know, on vacation or doing whatever the things that you're up to this summer, Built Bar is perfect for that. And they're also unveiling a birthday cake puff flavor now available. It brings you the fluffy marshmallowy goodness that you know from the puff flavors, the first protein infused marshmallow. And then they're throwing white chocolate and sprinkles on top of that. What's not to love? So start your summer off right by giving yourself a personal birthday party with every single bite of the birthday cake puff Built Bar by heading over to built.com. And when you do, you can get 15% off your order when you use the promo code LOCKED15. That's promo code LOCKED15, LOCKED15, for 15% off at built.com. So guys, here with Spencer McLaughlin of the Locked On Ducks and Locked On Pac-12 podcast, we just talked about his thoughts on Drake London and how he translates to the NFL level. Let's get his thoughts on Marcus Mariota. And, you know, we know what Marcus Mariota can do at the NFL level. We've seen good, we've seen bad. I guess, Spencer, my first question is, where do you sort of see Mariota falling on that spectrum here in Atlanta?
It's hard to say, honestly, because he's dealing with more turnover in his career. He hasn't had a stable situation in his entire time spent in the NFL, right? He was most recently a backup to Derek Carr in Las Vegas, a really high-end backup over there, and I think he's widely seen as a high-end backup or a low-end starter, which I think based on, you know, the sample size that we've seen from him is a fair assessment. But he's had three different head coaches, or he had three different head coaches, I should say, while he was in Tennessee. He had four or five different offensive coordinators. It was just a constant revolving door. And so he's not the sort of guy who, when he came into the NFL, was an Andrew Luck, Joe Burrow type, where you come in, put him in a bad situation, and boom, they start to win games immediately. He needed a little bit more continuity and stability around him to, you know, both adapt to NFL schemes and learn how to make those sorts of reads. And I think he just never found that. You know, he had a Pro Bowl season. He won a road playoff game against Andy Reid and the Chiefs in Arrowhead years ago, in which he threw a touchdown to himself, which is one of my favorite plays in the history of sports. But I think that when you look at him, the accuracy is there. But he has to pair that accuracy with good decision-making, because some of the interceptions that he's thrown over the years just look like he wasn't fully confident reading the defense. So I think that Arthur Smith has to approach it from a point of view who has some experience with Mariota. He was the OC that year when he ultimately was benched for Ryan Tannehill. So they know each other a little bit, and I'm sure that'll help. But I think the biggest thing with Mariota is you can't expect him to be somebody who's going to push the ball down the field like Mahomes. He was never an elite deep ball thrower at Oregon, and he never developed that in the NFL. And I think that's part of why his career didn't go the way that some thought it would, and that many, including myself, thought that he was capable of. And part of that is certainly on him. But when you look at it from a read standpoint, I think that's the biggest thing that he's got to improve, is how he assesses the defense, analyzes where the coverage is going, and knowing where his receivers are going to go. Because there were some interceptions he threw over the years where it was just like, man, I don't know if he saw him there. But the other thing is he's got to find confidence. You know, there are other moments where he should have let the ball rip and he didn't. And that's something that he has to be able to work on. But is he a serviceable starter who can make plays and win you games? I think that's absolutely true. And I wouldn't go as far to say he could have a Ryan Tannehill-like revival where he suddenly becomes a top 10, 15 quarterback in the NFL. But could he be in the top 20 or at least top 25? Yeah, I would say so. And that's somebody who, you know, can certainly be a stopgap quarterback and a solid veteran presence in the locker room for Atlanta.
Yeah, you know, one of the things I've discussed on this podcast going back to last summer when the Falcons picked up Josh Rosen was this idea of reclamation projects. Yeah. And when you look at the successful reclamation projects in the NFL, and Ryan Tannehill would probably qualify as one, a lot of these guys are veteran guys that, you know, started 50, 60 or more games. A lot of these guys, you know, and I think Tannehill started, you know, close to 100 games in Miami before finding success in Tennessee. And so when you look at a player like Marcus Mariota, he kind of checks that box as a guy that could be a successful reclamation project. But you do, at least for me, I kind of look at the situation in Atlanta as like, it doesn't seem like that's the ideal scenario for him to have that type of success. Because we saw with a guy like Ryan Tannehill going to an environment in Tennessee that had some weapons like an A.J. Brown, had a running game like Derrick Henry, and had a halfway decent defense in Tennessee. And I don't know if Mariota is going to have those same circumstances here in Atlanta, at least this season. It's still, the Falcons are working on building those things. So it's tough, because I think you sort of mentioned it. When Mariota is on his game, I think he can be a very effective quarterback, but I just don't know if the Falcons are an environment that puts him in that situation to have some of his better games moving forward. Where are you at on sort of the idea the Falcons may not necessarily have the supporting cast available right now, where we will see the best of Marcus Mariota this season?
Well, I think you make a great point comparing Atlanta to Tennessee and where they're different in terms of the situation that each respective quarterback is coming into. Atlanta certainly is not as well built of a roster or of a team with offensive weapons the way that Tennessee was. But I think the addition of Drake London helps significantly. So you have Drake London, you have Kyle Pitts. Even without Ridley there, that's a pretty decent array of weapons for him to have. Now, the offensive line, the defense, the running game, those things are not going to be at a supremely high level, I wouldn't expect this year. But That's why, as you said, I wouldn't go as far to say he could, you know, suddenly become a Tannehill type player, because he's not in that sort of situation. But could he be better than what he was at the end of his tenure with the Titans, when, you know, they felt the need to go in a different direction at the quarterback position? Yes, absolutely. I think that he can go above that and look more how he did in the Thursday night game, and what Oregon football fans everywhere were watching when Derek Carr unfortunately got injured, but Mariota came in, and it was Mariota against Justin Herbert. And we're just watching these guys go against one another. We're like, wow, this is awesome. An Oregon quarterback's on the field at all times, right? If you go back and watch that game, Mariota made a bunch of plays that generated some discussion of, okay, is someone going to sign him, or is someone going to trade for him? Because he showed the accuracy. He showed the mobility. He even had a couple of really nice deep balls. And I think he had one interception in that game, but he gave the Raiders a chance to win. But the Raiders had John Gruden as the head coach at the time, a hire I never thought made any sense. And for a whole litany of reasons, hasn't worked out very well for them. And so I think when you look at the situation that he had there, he showed you what he can be. And that's a serviceable quarterback. And we've seen him win a playoff game in this league. His head coach at the time, by the way, was Mike Mularkey, who I don't believe he's in the league right now. So I wouldn't put too much stock into, like, oh, well, maybe he just had a good coach that came through. No, not really. it was Mike Mularkey. And so I think that he's capable of, like, being a quarterback on a playoff team. On a Super Bowl team, you'd have to have an incredibly loaded roster, like ridiculously loaded roster that is not quarterback centric at all. But if you're talking about Atlanta's situation, can he be a guy who comes in and doesn't have you dreading turning on your television to watch the quarterback every week, and, you know, giving you at least some semblance of, okay, can we be competitive and try and, you know, build for the future here? The answer to that, I think, is a definitive yes.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think for me, it's not a question of the highs that Mariota can give you. He's shown enough of that throughout his career that when everything's working for him, everything's working for the offense, he can be a highly effective quarterback that you can go out there and can win you games. For me, the question is just going to be, what are the lows that you're getting with Mariota? And that was far too frequent in Tennessee, and Tennessee had the supporting staff that basically, oh, when Mariota's not playing well, just hand the ball off to Derrick Henry and let him sort of carry the offense. And I don't know if the Falcons really have that situation moving forward, but obviously that's something that the Falcons are going to try to build with.
What one interesting note on that, and I was talking about all the coaching turnover that he had. He had Mike Mularkey, he had Ken Wisenhunt, and then very briefly, Mike Vrabel. Those were his head coaches. And he did not have a hub of consistency there. I also argue he didn't have a hub of competency there. Now, Mike Vrabel was a very good coach, but he came in, made the change, and, you know, Mariota not being able to reach the ceiling, I think that damage had already been done by the previous staffs, who couldn't figure out, you mentioned Derrick Henry. They had Derrick Henry as a platoon running back for multiple years. For multiple years. Those are the staffs that he had in Tennessee. He did not develop, you know, some of it is on him. I'm not saying it's all the coaching staff and they blow it. Yeah, like, no, it was a mixture of the two. Mariota did not improve his deep ball accuracy, and he did not improve his ability to make reads and analyze defenses the way that he needed to become a franchise caliber quarterback in the NFL. But he also was given a little bit of a crap sandwich there. If he'd gone in and had Mike Vrabel right away, I think that that's a much different situation, because Mike Vrabel came in and realized, hey, this Derrick Henry guy is bigger than every other human being on the field, including some of the defensive linemen. Why don't we just hand him the ball? But the previous staffs had him as like, ah, no, we'll give it to him every now and then. And, you know, who could possibly want a backfield of Marcus Mariota and Derrick Henry? Who could run the ball with those two back there? That was where their mindsets were at. So I think that should give Falcon fans some upside mentally about how they think about Mariota. The downside is definitely there, but to say that he can't get back to, you know, a Pro Bowl caliber level the way that he was for one season in Tennessee, I think is an incorrect way of looking at it.
That's fair enough. You don't have to convince Falcon fans that Mike Mularkey's bad.
every job. So they're very familiar with that. But yeah. Spencer, I really appreciate you joining me, sharing your insight into Drake London as well as Marcus Mariota. And we'll have to look forward to seeing what these two guys can do. I think they can be some of the bright spots for the Falcons this season. And I'll be curious to sort of see if the Falcons try to do a little bit more with Mariota's running ability to kind of supplement what probably is going to be a little bit more of a lackluster run game. I guess my last question for you on that note, in terms of Mariota's running ability, we know that he has the capability, but the big knock on Mariota throughout his career has been durability concerns.
Yep.
Do you feel like that's something that the Falcons can truly exploit, given those question marks in terms of whether or not he could hold up, or is it feel like similar to what it was with Tennessee, sort of a weapon in their back pocket, but not necessarily something that they can feature too much because of those durability concerns?
I think with the state of the Falcons right now, and also where Mariota is trying to get in his career, I would expect, and we'll see if Arthur Smith wants to use it prominently. I think they could. It's not the sort of scheme that he runs. I think his mobility would come into play most in the play action game and the boots that Arthur Smith loves to do out of those one back two tight end sets. But the thing with Mariota right now is he's trying to show that he can be a consistent starter once again. Well, he's going to be willing to do anything. I mean, if you watch that game I mentioned earlier between the Chargers and the Raiders, I think it was 2020, maybe. I don't know. It's all blurring together. But anyway, if you go watch that game, you notice Mariota made a couple of big-time running plays, and he also was not as keen on protecting himself as he was when he was projecting as the franchise guy in Tennessee. So I think that's an advantage for the Falcons, because if they ask him to use his legs and say, yeah, we want you to run, we want you to make plays, even if that puts him a little bit more at risk for taking a couple hits, I think Marcus has to be at a point in his career where he's willing to do that, because he's trying to put on tape. He's trying to put up numbers. He's trying to show that he can be a big explosive playmaker. And if he's going to do that, then he has to be willing to run. So I'm not sure how much Arthur Smith wants to use something like a read option, but if they do, I don't think Marcus has to just be there and pose a threat as a runner. I think he can actually be a threat as a runner as well, because he's going to be in a situation where he wants to show everything that he can do to try to get, you know, maybe another opportunity after Atlanta, after his 2-year contract is up. And so his legs are a big part of that. And he's had durability concerns, but I think he's at a point where he has to be willing to take that risk. And so I'd expect the Falcons, should they choose to utilize that element of his repertoire.
Okay, great insight there, Spencer. Let the people know what you're doing on Locked On Ducks, Locked On Pac-12, this time of year in the coming days and weeks.
Yeah, we're out there rocking and rolling every day, Locked On Pac-12, covering everything in the Conference Champions and Locked On Ducks, all things Oregon Ducks, both free and available on all podcasting platforms. You can like and subscribe anywhere that you listen to the show. They're both on YouTube as well. And you can hit me up on Twitter at @Smalls_55, or the Twitter accounts for the shows are @LockedOnDucks and @LO_Pac12. And you can follow me there as well. If you ever want a question or you just want to say hello, anything of the sorts, by all means, DMs are wide open. But Aaron, it's great to be on, and I'm always down and around to talk about former Pac-12 players and especially former Ducks.
Well, you know, I'll keep you on the Rolodex, probably have you on at some point in training camp once we get to see some of these guys on the football field and sort of what they're building towards, what they can be this upcoming season. But Spencer, I really enjoyed the conversation and look forward to future ones.
Yep. Thank you, Aaron.
All right, guys, that's going to do it for us with Spencer McLaughlin of Locked On Ducks and Locked On Pac-12, sharing his insights on the two, you know, Drake London and Marcus Mariota. But we still got more to come as we continue today's Locked On Falcons. And we'll sort of talk a little bit more about Marcus Mariota and set the record straight for those Mariota stands out there in the comments that are still grumbling over the lack of respect that my guy Marcus Mariota is getting from the team. And sort of I'll give you my thoughts on my expectations for Mariota this upcoming season and whether or not we can expect him to be better or worse than what Matt Ryan brought to the table a year ago. So, guys, I want to thank you once again for making Locked On Falcons your first listen each and every day. And, of course, make sure you check us out for the rest of the week. Of course, later this week, we'll be talking more about the Falcons' schedule. and breaking that down for you on Thursday night and Friday morning. If you're listening to this, if you want more insight into Drake London, of course, you'll find the big sort of comprehensive scouting report that I will be dropping as planned on Sunday evening on YouTube and Monday morning on the audio version of the podcast. And so we're continuing this Locked on Drake London week, but we'll be wrapping up today's episode talking a little bit more about Marcus Mariota. You know, I said this back in March when we signed Marcus Mariota, that he's going to be the least talked about starting quarterback ever on the Locked on Falcons podcast, because I see him sort of as a bridge quarterback. And I know a lot of people take offense to that notion that Mariota can't be more than a bridge quarterback. But I just think, you know, when you really look realistically at the situation that the Falcons are, like, they're not going to necessarily tie themselves to Marcus Mariota without him playing at a really, really high level. And I just don't think the circumstances here in Atlanta are really conducive to that, as just discussed with Spencer on this podcast. And I think, you know, when I look back at Matt Ryan's 2021 season, you know, I saw a player that I think played at a really high level, A level, if you want to call it that, for four games last year, and then kind of played at varying degrees of C levels for 13 games this past year. And typical in a Matt Ryan season, you're going to see like 4 to 6 A level games. You're going to see 6 or more B level games. And then you're going to see, you know, maybe 4 other C level games. And like, when your quarterback is playing at an A level, those are games that you firmly expect your team to win, because your quarterback's playing at a high level, unless you're facing another quarterback that's also playing at an A level. And then the supporting cast comes to the figure. The supporting cast comes a little bit more into the mix when your quarterback is playing at a B level. But again, that's still a high enough level where you expect to win that game, assuming that your supporting cast doesn't completely crap the bed. But then C level performances from your quarterback, you're really relying on your supporting cast to win the day. And when you look at Matt Ryan's 2021 season, in those 4 A-level games, at least as I see it, you know, against Washington, the Jets, Miami, and the first New Orleans game, the Falcons were 3-1 in those games. They probably should have been 4-0. Shout out to Taylor Heineke, you know, for ruining those dreams. But in those 13 C-level games, the Falcons were 4-9. And you look at the 4 wins that they had in those 13 games, it was against Jacksonville, Detroit, the Giants, and Carolina. Not coincidentally, 4 teams that were picking in the top 6 in this past year's draft. And so you had an opportunity where your supporting cast, you know, could go up against teams that were presumably weaker than you, some of the worst teams in the league. And so therefore, when you weren't getting that high tier play from your quarterback and Matt Ryan in those games, your supporting cast was just good enough to beat some of the worst teams in the league. But then you look at this year's schedule and you just don't see that many games against bad teams. And I think, you know, I know the new and improved Aaron is all about optimism and positivity and whatnot, but I've just heard so much hype and buzz from, you know, a certain subset of the Falcon fans over the last, you know, 10 to 12 days or whatever the case may be. And I feel like that's going to come crashing down to a halt later this week when the schedule gets dropped and people actually look at the schedule and see, oh, like, this schedule is not as conducive to the Falcons having a good year as people realize. I think people just kind of operating in this sort of, you know, for lack of a better, this fantasy world where the Falcons have the same schedule that they had a year ago. And I think that is going to get a rude awakening come Thursday night when people actually sit down and look at the schedule. And I just, when I look at a player like Marcus Mariota, like, him having like 4 A-level games, or, you know, I think 4 to 6 or whatever number you want to throw in it, is, I think, a realistic expectation for him. And those are 4 to 6 games that I think the Falcons will have a very good chance of winning those games if they can get that type of play from Mariota. It's just, I think that he's the type of quarterback that, unlike Matt Ryan, is not going to give you a whole lot of B games as you typically see in most Matt Ryan seasons. He's going to be more of that C-level quarterback for the majority of the season. And when you look at the Falcons schedule, like, you're not going to see too many bad teams in those circumstances where the Falcons can add a couple more wins to the win total. You know, I know people say, oh, well, you never know, the NFL is unpredictable. And it's true. Like, there's a lot of teams in the league that you just don't know what they're going to be each and every year. But we know that there's a handful of teams, you know, 6 to 8 teams at either end of the spectrum that we know are going to be bad, that we know are not going to be playoff teams. Just like, you know, there's 6 to 8 teams that you know are going to be, you know, Super Bowl contenders and definite playoff teams. And, you know, I just don't see that many teams on the Falcons schedule this year outside of maybe Seattle and Chicago and maybe Carolina that we say, oh, those teams are definitely going to be bad this season. And, right, the Falcons, to me, are now in that same group of teams where it's like, we know that this team is not going to be a playoff team. And previously under Matt Ryan for most of the last, you know, 4 or so years, like they were in that middle tier where it's like, I don't know if this team is going to be good. I don't know if they're going to be bad. They'll be probably somewhere, you know, in that, you know, 6 to 9 win range. And it's just kind of, they get the breaks or whatever. They'll be, you know, a potential contender, but like no one's sitting there and looking at those teams. It's like Super Bowl contenders. And I see a bunch of those types of teams on the Falcons schedule. And maybe, you know, if they can get some A-level performances from Marcus Mariota against some of those teams like Pittsburgh or Cleveland or, you know, the Chargers, New Orleans, Washington, et cetera, you know, maybe they can add some wins, but it'll be interesting to sort of see how it all plays out. But it's not a knock on Marcus Mariota, despite the lack of love and faith that I show on a daily basis here on this podcast in him. It's just, I think the circumstances are just not conducive to him coming in and putting his best foot forward to really showcase what he has left in Atlanta right now. So we'll just sort of see how that plays out, guys. That will do it for us here on today's Locked On Falcons. Tomorrow, we will be joined by Ben Solak of The Ringer to talk a little bit more about his thoughts on the Falcons draft. And we'll try to get a little bit more X's and O's with Ben. That's something that he's a little bit more known for. And we'll sort of see if, you know, I can keep up with Ben from a knowledge standpoint, or if he's just going to dunk on me and run circles around me, which is probably going to be what happens. But that will be the plan for tomorrow's episode, guys. Before we duck out of here, you know, always want to thank you guys for making Locked On Falcons your first listen. Always recommend second listens. And of course, why not recommend the Locked On Sports Atlanta podcast, family of shows that you can find all on the same feed, A to Z with Mark Zeno, Hitting Hard with John Chuckery at ATL Day Ones with Jarvis Davis and Tanitra Batiste, giving you their thoughts on all things Atlanta sports, Georgia sports, as well as, you know, sort of national headline grabbing news around the various sports leagues. And you can find them all on the same podcast feed on your preferred podcast platform, as well as on YouTube at Locked On Sports Atlanta. Guys, I appreciate you for tuning in. We're still locked on Drake London all week long. We'll continue to be. Appreciate it. Till then.